Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, 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 yes. Angry Fanatics, we back. A lot has happened. A lot has happened. Yes, yes, Angry Fanatic, we back, we back. Who's on the line with me tonight?
Young Shad's on the line, what's up, guys?
What's going on? You got Keanu on the line too, man.
What's up, what's up? So,
what's
the
up?
Last time we was here, there's been a lot has happened. All around sports, not just NBA. So, we got a little bit to talk about tonight, fellas.
We do.
Good party, man. I can't wait.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right. So, what's first on the list tonight, Tay?
So, what's first on the list is pretty much Summer League and pretty much the free agency that just came to pass in the NBA. The last time we left off, it was basically talking about the draft and all the trades that happened. So, now we have to fast forward mostly into the free agency and the Summer League and how the rookies did in the Summer League. Who you guys think was the most impressive standout? in the Summer League so far, since the Summer League has pretty much come to an end today.
You going to fit that off, Key?
You know, and I told y'all, watch out for the boy, Lonzo Ball. Man, after that first game, seeing everybody jump to conclusion, you got to give these kids some time. You know, it's not, there's off nights. This kid has come around and has just absolutely tore up every single game he's played in after that first game. Talking about rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, points. He could do anything he wanted to do on that court. He's my MVP.
Man. Hey, Lonzo, like I said, Lonzo's going to be good, man. He's going to be good. Now, like I said, I don't know what type of player he's going to be. I don't know if he's ever going to give you the 19 and 10 like the Chris Paul, or he's going to be a 20 and 8 like a Baron Davis. But I think he's going to be in a 16 and 11 guy, in my opinion. But to get the kid's court vision is crazy. It's crazy.
He was actually named Summer League MVP today, before the game even started, just barring any win or anything. But pretty much Lonzo's definitely shown that he can play at the level that he can play at, especially for the NBA. Again, since it's basically going against prospects and rookies still, and not the actual NBA players, I want to see how he adjusts to actually playing against these elite athletes in the NBA. But besides that, you can already tell this dude is going to be a really good passer, really going to find his teammates with ease too, without any hesitation. I don't feel like he's going to be that type of rookie where, and usually when you get this type of rookie where they will score more but have more turnovers, example like Victor Oladipo during his rookie year, or other players during their rookie year, especially scoring point guards. Lonzo is going to be more of the efficient point guards that isn't going to make the highlight pass unless it's like completely there for him, and he's going to make it with certain accuracy, and he's going to get his teammates involved in the best ways possible. I think his Lakers teammates are going to be really excited for him when he first plays his first game as a Laker.
Now, just a little side note, gentlemen. That's my MVP. I loved them. I picked them. But I ain't going to front. I think they did hide him from De'Aaron Fox. I don't think they wanted to see him get chewed up another time. That's just me. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, my guy, it was a tough call for me to pick my MVP for the D League, or Summer League, actually, not D League. My pick is going to be, it's 10 out of 10 because everybody knows I'm a big Dennis Smith guy. But after watching the game that I watched yesterday, I'm going to have to go with Caleb Swanigan in Portland.
He's been balling too.
Caleb Swanigan?
Scoring a lot of points.
You know what? But what got me the most was just his court control, where he was catching the ball in the post, waiting for the double team to come over, kicking it to the right guy, whether it be the cutter or the three-point. You know, the guy sliding down the three-point line. I mean, the kid can play. Like, and I mean, going forward, I know when Portland lost to Marcus Aldridge, that's a big hole at the big man. But I'm thinking this kid can fill it. But he impressed me a lot yesterday.
Yeah, no, the kid's efficient. He has a very, very good understanding of the game. His IQ is off the charts when it comes to making the right pass, making the right play, and the kid can score with the best of them right now. Definitely, definitely an underrated player. Very underlooked guy this summer league.
One player that definitely struck me during the summer league, Swanigan actually played really well in the with the Blazers, especially during it. Also, Gutierrez from the Blazers as well. Former player basically made some very good assist plays, just basically good playmaking plays, especially if he's looking for a backup job. But another player that really struck my mind was John Collins from the Atlanta Hawks. Dude was going ham on rebounding, showed his athleticism, showed his range. He showed his whole repertoire at the Summer League, and I think it should put the league on notice, especially how much points he was scoring in each game and how much rebounds he was getting in each game. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah. Like I said, another person who impressed me, obviously, was Dennis Smith. Definitely seeing his explosive. No surprise, I followed this kid since high school, and I thought he was the best point guard coming into this draft period, like I previously stated. Just seeing him with the explosiveness, he reminds me of a younger version of D. Rose. I don't think he's a really court vision guy, but the Mavericks, court vision of the guy is not kind of not what the Mavericks need at this point in time, but he's another one who impressed me. But outside of that, I didn't really watch too much. I followed a few players here and there. I mean, like I said, the thing is, it is like more of a D-League competition. You watch a couple games to see the top picks, you know, just play. But in reality, it's just one big D-League fest for me.
Yes. Hey, Cut. So just basically, do you guys feel Tatum did basically impress a little bit more than usual compared to others? Like, do you feel like Jason Tatum should get more recognition?
He did what I expected him to do.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You know, the thing about this summer league, right, like how we were talking about Ball and Swanigan showing basketball IQ. Because I think when you look in the summer league, that's really what you want to see. I mean, hell, the other year I saw Tony Snell average 30 points a game. You know what I mean? So if you're coming out there and you're just a scorer, and that's all you're doing, and you're scoring on this competition that you should score on because you're a top five pick, that doesn't mean it's going to translate. If that's your only the only trait that you're showing, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
yeah,
I don't know.
He did what I thought he was going to do. He scored. He's a scorer. I didn't see too much else from him, which is why I wouldn't say he exceeded my expectations. He met them. What I thought he was going to do is exactly what he did. So, we'll see how he fits in. He's definitely going to be a good scoring option for them, a good catch and shoot guy come regular season, but we'll see what happens.
Right. All right, so let's get on to the new topic or the next topic. Who are the competitors in the Western Conference Finals not Western Conference Finals, my fault. Who's the competitors to basically beat out the Warriors or basically put up a front against the Warriors?
Oh, man.
Yep.
Go
that
ahead,
question
Jeremy.
Everybody always wonder.
Oh, man, I mean, if I had to choose at this very moment with Melo still in New York, I'm going to have to say OKC, especially with just because of Russell Westbrook and Durant. Now you know what Russ is going to want to bring it. Do I actually see any true competition for him? No, I still don't see any true competition for him. But if I had to pick, I'm going to go with OKC at this point in time.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and say the Spurs. I think we didn't really get to see what Kawhi could do against them in a seven-game series. We got to see what he could do against one game with them, and he was blowing them out of the waters. Now, you add Rudy Gay to that mix as well, I think they could be trouble for them. I don't know if they're going to beat them. I'm not saying they're going to win, but as far as my competitor, I'm going to go ahead and say San Antonio.
I have to say San Antonio because San Antonio is really the only closest team to really put the Golden State Warriors from the West team, basically put Golden State Warriors in a state of panic, especially during that first game and the way they played and dominated throughout that first half. It really showed that San Antonio, especially with Kawhi Leonard, is a very unstoppable force. Not unstoppable, but pretty much, you know, a point where it's really hard to stop the game plan that they set forth and the system that they can play in, especially when their best players is out there. Now, it was unfortunate that Kawhi fell down with injury, and then we didn't really get to see the true potential of the series. But if I had to say today, and based off the moves that was made, I'd say San Antonio is the more closest team to basically compete against the Warriors. Now, Houston has made some strides into getting players such as Aba Mute, P.J. Tucker, getting all these defensive players and pretty much filling up their roster with depth. But I still don't think it's enough to even – I feel like it's enough to basically get them a game or two, but it's not enough to even compete against the Warriors, especially in a series in the playoffs. And so
who are you talking about, Durac?
OKC. Go ahead.
OKC or Durac? OKC?
I feel OKC is over the Rockets at this point. Yes, like Paul and Harden would be, I feel like it's going to be a good fit, but I don't think it's going to be a great fit that everybody thinks it's going to be. I feel like with Westbrook and Paul George, especially in the OKC system, is freedom for the stars to basically get a, you know, number called to score points and everything. Through the offense pick and roll with Russell Westbrook and basically isolation ball from that point on. But for Houston, it's more, you know, run and gun, and that fits just in the play style of Golden State, and I don't think you want to run and gun against the Golden State Warriors, especially.
And see, that's the thing. I look at the Houston Rockets and everybody's hype for Melo coming in. And if it happens, let's say he does go over to Houston, you look at their roster, the way it's built, they got rid of a lot of players to bring in Chris Paul, a lot of key role players. All that roster's built to do is just outscore the Warriors. And I don't think they're going to do that for seven games. I just can't see them doing that in a series. Now, I look at OKC. You just re-signed Roberson. It's a good defensive signing. Then you go ahead and you get Paul George to the mix, a two-way star in this league. You pair him up with Russell Westbrook, another two-way star in this league. Again, you got your front court with Adams and
Patrick Patterson now. With the signing, Patrick Patterson from the Toronto Raptors.
Another stretch four. They have a better roster to try and compete with the Warriors rather than Houston. I think Houston's going to be all hype. I think it's gonna, when it comes down to it, I think they're going to get knocked out of the playoffs. Second round, depending on who they match up with, I don't think it's going to be too much of a question with them.
I'd say a team that could potentially get better and actually be a challenge to the Warriors later on, and depends on how contracts play out, and depends on how the players develop, is Minnesota. Because that's, even though they're not going to be a team, obviously, this year to compete against the Warriors, I don't feel like it. I feel like they're going to make things a little bit uncomfortable for them. I don't feel like the Warriors are going to get into their offensive sets as usual, especially with two athletic wings. And now, even though Jeff Teague is not really a solid defender, pretty much two through five is pretty much really good defensively. And if you can just basically imagine what could happen if they all grow and basically get, you know, better in the year's time, especially during the Warriors area with the super team, I feel like that would be the only or close to only threat besides San Antonio maybe to basically take down that Golden State Warriors team or possibly take it down.
Let's go Spurs.
All right, so we got pretty much people coming from the East to the West, and it's been a lot of movement and a lot of changes, especially Paul Millsap going to Denver Nuggets and a lot of other Eastern players or Eastern All-Stars going to the West to basically play for teams and build teams to basically beat the Warriors or the Cavaliers. Do you feel like the East is wide open for certain teams?
Oh, my God. You know what? The East is some pure garbage. It's a terrible mess. It's garbage. It's like double-A baseball. It's terrible. I just don't get the understanding of people like Millsap and Chris Paul you know, going to the West, or Chris Paul staying in the West. Just go to the East. What are you doing? I mean, maybe they have this mindset, and it's mind-boggling to me. But this is the only thing I can think of. Hey, if we beat the Warriors in the playoffs, then we could beat somebody later in the East. I do not know. I don't have any understanding, and I don't understand, like, why the NBA won't do something about this. I mean, you know, Jeremy Lin came out today and said he doesn't care what anybody says, the Nets are going to make the playoffs. And you know what? It's laughable, but with the damn conference, it's actually partially believable because it's that bad. It's that terrible. It's terrible.
I mean, I look at the Eastern Conference, and there's only two teams I can really say are locks in terms of Boston and Cleveland. All the way from 3-8 is wide open. I mean, it's just like you said, we can sit here and laugh all day at what Jeremy Lin said, but what's stopping them? What's stopping them from making the playoffs? Who out there is really gonna stop them? It's wide open. It's a joke. I hate the way the Eastern Conference is built right now. They need to do.
Mark
they need
my
to
words.
Just cut it out.
37-45. Somebody's gonna make the playoffs.
Yeah, I can see it. Especially like
it's a shame.
Especially like a team like maybe, I don't know, Indiana, Charlotte, like one of those teams. I feel like is gonna be those teams to basically get like a negative record and still get into the playoffs. The East is pretty much wide open, and I think the only team that really looks like a challenge to Cavaliers or Cleveland is Boston. But I still don't even think Boston has enough to even compete against Cleveland. The East compared 3-8 is just going to be very bad. Not as bad as far as talent wise, but just bad compared to the other conference, which is the West Conference. Like the Bucks pretty much have their young core. They still didn't develop. Toronto still has their mess over there. They think they still have the players to basically try to compete. Washington is still in like a standstill or a twilight zone right now where they have their players ready, but they don't know how to take the next step. And it's just
Washington will be number three.
Yeah.
Yeah, Washington will be number three. Past that, I don't know what's happening.
Like, people, and because, like, pretty much teams are just basically in there just to, you know, be there. Pretty much just like, okay, we made it to the playoffs. That's great success. But in all honesty, you're not going nowhere, especially with those two teams in the East, especially the Celtics and the Cavaliers. And then where you have to face out West, even if you do happen to stumble upon the conference finals or stumble upon the finals, you still have to face a juggernaut of teams. So I see the Eastern Conference as a joke.
I disagree with what you said.
Go ahead.
Two things I disagree with what you said. I don't think the Hornets are going to have a negative record. I actually think the Hornets will be a top five seed in the East this year. And Dwight Howard.
Yeah, gotcha.
And two, I don't think that you said you don't think the Celtics have enough to get past the Cavs. I think the Cavs are going to pack it in this year. I think LeBron's going to mail it in, like the coward he is. They're going to get beat by the Celtics, and that's going to open the door for him, just like it did some years back, for him to walk out the door because his heart's not in it. And the Celtics are going to go to the final versus the Warriors and get swept.
I feel with the current situation with LeBron, they said just today he has concerns about the front office. Because pretty much, yeah. From USA Today, I read the article. It's crazy. They said that he had problems with the front office already. But just in general, if they keep their team as it is, I feel like the Cavs, like just for this season alone, LeBron I feel like is going to leave, just like you said, Angry. So I agree with you on that. Pretty much, I still feel like if they still had the team and this is like their last year together pretty much, if LeBron, you know, puts in the effort, obviously I can see like them going to the finals and beating out the Celtics and then going to the finals to basically play the Warriors. But in terms of the Celtics getting past the Cavaliers, I can see it happening, but I don't see the Celtics just basically that team, just in my opinion. I don't see it like truly happening 100% or like, you know, certainty that it's going to happen.
Let's just put this cast thing into a little bit more perspective. We're gonna spend a second on this real quick. Let's just put this in perspective now. Okay, so you lose, season ends. Okay, now this right. guy, the queen is, you know, he I don't know if you noticed with this guy here. This he's a character. He foreshadows when he's going to lose. You have to listen to him real close. He said before this first, you know, this is a juggernaut. This is going to be a tough physical and mental battle for me. He was foreshadowing that he was going to lose. Okay? So, and if somehow, some joke, some way that he won, he was going to say, oh, well, we did a juggernaut. I don't know how we did it, blah, blah, blah. Okay? Season ends, that happens. They lose. Okay? Foreshadowed it. Then David Griffin is let go. Away from...
Right.
What, you know, and honestly, I agree with Dan Gilbert on this move. I agree with Dan Gilbert fully. I'm pretty sure it came down to dollars. I don't know how good of a GM David Griffin is, to be completely honest with you.
I think it was control of the basketball operation. Like, I think David Griffin wants complete control of basically how he makes basketball decisions, and is not completely based off of the owner, like, making, you know, goals or promises, and where he has to keep up with it. I think Griffin wanted control because he asked for control for the New York Knicks job. The Knicks refused. So pretty much, I think it was more of control and also money, like you said. I think Dan Gilbert just didn't want to let go of that.
So Griffin didn't have control, because I mean, I'm not aware of that situation, but I didn't know who had control over the operation in Cleveland. Do you know?
LeBron James.
Well, we know LeBron, but I mean, on paper.
He's everything. He's the GM, the coach, the scout. He's everything when he's on that team. It's crazy. I've never seen a player with this much control ever in any sport. I have not seen it. It's out of this world.
Bill Russell was a player coach, and I don't think he had this much control. It's insane. All right. So let's keep going with this. Okay, so Griffin is let go. LeBron post, you know, he's concerned. He wasn't made aware. I mean, as if the owner has to tell you everything. Okay, he doesn't have to tell you anything. You work for him. Okay? But I guess we forget that. But going forward, then there's a draft night trade. Kyrie Irving's supposed to be going to Phoenix for Eric Bledsoe in the fourth pick. LeBron makes sure that trade is nixed. Do I agree with David Griffin? Do I agree with Dan Gilbert on that? Hell yeah, I agree with it. Because you know what? You need to start planning now for post-LeBron. Because he's leaving. And you're not going to get shot in the foot twice. But LeBron nixes the deal. Okay, so now you got Kyrie. Then Kyrie comes out and makes a statement. If LeBron leaves, he may ask for a trade. Okay, problem number two. Or three, actually. Then you got Tristan Thompson dating a Kardashian. So we know what happens when that goes down. Problem number four. Now you got an alienated Kevin Love, who has just been pretty much dangled out there for pretty much nothing. There's no way. And they tried to trade Shumpert. They couldn't even get that done. Problem number is, there's no way this team is going to make it back to the finals, in my opinion. It's dysfunctional. It's over.
That's the LeBron effect. LeBron comes in and you build a roster for right now with no future planning at all. Then when he's getting ready to go, you have nothing. You have nothing. It's incredible. It's incredible how they just allowed themselves to dig a hole this big and jump in it, and now they're looking at themselves like, how are we going to get out? Well, you did it to yourself. You did this.
And the funniest thing is, too, it's like when they was actually trying to trade Shumpert, when they was actually trying to trade JR and all these players, they couldn't find really no trade partners, especially Houston wanted Iman Shumpert. And they couldn't find no trade partners. They couldn't find nobody to take these players because their market value was just terrible. It was either one, terrible, or two. Teams felt like those players are just basically one-sided players that can basically only do one thing or pretty much lack the talent that they have previously before. And it just made the off season, especially for the Cavaliers, just even 10 times even worse because they couldn't find deals or moves to improve their team. Mostly because, like you said, LeBron, either Knicks did, and then also the movement of David Griffin.
I tell you what. Let's move on from this subject, because the reason I want to do it, because later this week I want to do a podcast, a 30-minute podcast, straight on this coward. And I want to welcome anybody who thinks they can defend this coward's moves in his whole career. I'm going to go looking for people, and I call them the Lebronites. I'm going to look for any Lebronites that I can find to bring onto this show and really defend him, because I see it on Facebook, on social media, everything, defending him every day, and I'm tired of it because there's nothing to defend. There's nothing to defend. We crowned his ass the minute he came out of high school before he even shot one basket, and we continue to crown his ass, and I'm tired of it, and I'm ready to destroy him,
ladies and gentlemen. He's head hunting.
I've had enough.
I try to see if I can. I can try to see if I can get some more people to basically talk about that situation, because I know there's some LeBronites in my group chat that can probably talk about or try to defend them. They probably put up a compelling argument too. We can see about that. Definitely.
Come on, y'all. Come on. Bring it.
So
we out here.
So. One recent move, and as we're talking about the Cavaliers and the Celtics, one interesting topic that we have now is Isaiah Thomas wants that Brinks truck to come through his front door, and he wants that max. Do you feel like Boston should give Isaiah Thomas the max, or you feel like it's more trouble in Boston than what you guys think it is regarding his contract?
How you want to lead it off, Jeremy?
Sure. Shouldn't be a problem. He's not a max player. He's 5'9". He had the best season of his career. You're not going to win a title with playing that way. He's not a max player, but can I see him get the max contract? Sure, I can see him getting one. He's not a max player, in my opinion. But I mean, you definitely keep him. I think Boston messed up by taking Tatum and not taking Fultz. As I stated before, because I think if you took Fultz, you have that two-guard system that you need going deep in front. There are two different scorers, and you can either sign and trade Thomas's contract or you can give it to him, whichever way you want to do it. But I think you put yourself in a position now where you almost have to give it to him now. So,
yeah, and that's exactly what it is. You went ahead and you took Tatum, which the player just – as a player, no problem with the pick. Good player, no issues with him. But you took him at a loaded position. You stocked at three. And then you're reaching
very
for Gordon Hayward. I don't understand what the future is. You should have drafted a point guard. You should have brought him in to replace Isaiah Thomas. God forbid you can't give him the max. And I don't think Isaiah Thomas is a max player. I just don't. Simple.
I don't see Zay Thomas being a max player, and pretty much him being 5'9" is big issue and like a very concerning thing. That when he was out with injury, Marcus Smart came in and basically made that team. I feel like the Celtics played better. Obviously, the offense wasn't there, and they had to basically tough it out and basically grind it out against the Cavaliers during that game. I forgot what game it was specifically. But when Isaiah Thomas out for that season, I mean, out for the playoffs and pretty much the season, the whole team dynamic changed. It was more defensive. It was more gritty, more tough. And with that, like, just basically adding all these players, especially the loaded small forward spot, like you said, Keanu, with Gordon Hayward, you still got Jay Crowder. You still got Jaylen Brown. You still got James Young, who's playing backup. And you still got and then you bring in Jason Tatum. Pretty much a lot of fours. I mean, a lot of threes and fours that can basically, spread out, which is good in terms of small ball if you need it, a small ball. And I feel like Jaylen Brown could play the two. But, again, do you really want your franchise player or your max player for now to be 5'9", a 5'9 point guard? Yes, that can score, but is a very and I mean very big liability on defense, where if he gets switched on to opponent or basically like any two or three, he's pretty much going to get demolished regardless of how much effort he puts in to the defensive side. He's just not going to overcome that obstacle. So I don't see him getting that max that Brinks truck anytime soon. I feel like a team will possibly pay him just based off his name and based off his season that he had last season, but I don't feel like he should deserve the max contract, especially for the Celtics. I feel like they messed up and should have got Fultz instead of making that trade and putting themselves in a deeper hole with the positions, especially the three and the two position.
I mean, they could even got Dennis Smith. You could have got there's so many options and you went at three.
Got
they also got rid of their best defensive player in Avery Bradley.
Yeah,
let me ask this question.
They traded Bradley for Marcus Morris.
Well, looking back at what they just did, could they have not got Fultz and Tatum with the assets that they had?
They could have possibly
made a trade right back up there.
Yep.
Like if you were going to get rid of Bradley and you were shipping Crowder out, could you have not possibly come to a deal, maybe at pick number three or something, and say, hey, listen, we'll give you our back-end two first-round picks or next year Brooklyn pick and Jaylen Brown, another player, maybe Oleinik or somebody that was on the roster at the time, and, hey, give us your third pick or your fourth pick, and then still took Tatum and you had Fultz and Tatum?
Could have helped them out cap-wise, too.
Yep.
I think what Danny Ainge did, I mean, I don't have a person – their roster's not bad, but I think that he mishandled his assets and he could have did a little bit better than what he did, in my opinion. I don't know. I thought things could have been done a little bit differently. That's just
– I feel like he won or did – the thing that he's supposed to do, obviously, even though struck it down on Jimmy Butler and Paul George, and then landing Gordon Hayward, which wasn't a bad thing, but it wasn't the smartest thing. I feel like, again, like you said, they need another guard, especially if Isaiah Thomas do want, like, he's obviously going to want the max. He's been saying it. He's been preaching it. Why not, you know, go for another guard just in case this thing doesn't work out? And still keep your team more relevant, more in the hunt, more of the future to basically take over that East spot. As soon as the Cavaliers' dysfunction basically ends, pretty much your team is going to be the only one on top. It's going to be a hard team to beat. Why not add, you know, a guard, especially if Isaiah Thomas is going to walk, if you feel like he's not going to be that max player, especially him being 5'9". Now, I don't know if Danny Ainge believes Isaiah Thomas is franchise players for his team, that his mindset is completely unnoticeable, is a mystery. All I know is he's not letting go of Terry Rozier for some reason. All I know he's not letting go of Jaylen Brown and all these young potential players. So we'll just see what he does. I feel like Isaiah Thomas doesn't deserve the max whatsoever.
And you know what? I'm not mad at Isaiah Thomas. You know, you've been bouncing around the league for a little bit now. If you're not a journeyman now, you're on the verge of becoming a journeyman. You had a good season. You're watching all of these subpar players cash out with just ridiculous deals. Get your money, man. Get your money because the kid is nice. Isaiah Thomas, we can question his defensive efforts. We know he's a liability because of his size. But offensively, man, he was one of the best players in the league last season. You had a good year. I'm watching all these young kids who ain't as good as me. I know it. Cash out. Get your money, homie. If Boston ain't going to pay you, somebody is. Go get it.
Definitely. All right, so we're going to do pretty much the last two topics on the NBA side. I'm just going to put it together or mix it in together. So it's going to be like kind of quick of hot takes. How you guys feel about Rudy Gay going to the Spurs, and how do you feel about Rondo teaming up with Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, and Jrue Holiday with New Orleans Pelicans?
You want me to start off, Jeremy?
Yeah, you go start.
Well, I love both of those moves. I love him. I absolutely love him. Rudy Gay to the Spurs is going to be outstanding. He's going to help them out tremendously. He's going to take the load off of Kawhi Leonard. He's going to help out LaMarcus Aldridge. He's a cutter as well as a scorer. He's going to be – LaMarcus Aldridge will be on the post. Rudy Gay will be willing to drive right up in there. It's going to help him out, take pressure off every single one of them. Love that signing. Then – and he's a defensive – defensively, he's a solid player too. He can defend. So he's going to help them out. Rondo to the Pelicans. It just seems like a natural fit. Now, I know Rondo hasn't been Rondo for a while now, but this just seems so perfect for him. You got two of the best bigs in the NBA. You can run pick and rolls with all day and have fun. And then you got Holiday, who's another solid player. It seems like it's going to be something good down there for them. Hopefully he don't curse out any refs or, you know, do any crazy stuff. He's been wilding out for a while now, but I like both the signings.
Eric?
Okay. Rudy Gay.
Uh-oh.
The move from Rudy Gay to the Spurs. It adds versatility to the team. I don't know if I like it even better if Rudy Gay is not a starter, though.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens there. But when you come to playoff time, he's big enough where you can actually kind of go small ball and move him to the four at times as well. So I like the Rudy Gay move. The Rondo move. It's a good move. It's cute. Nice. You know, it gives them a point guard. Well, now they have two centers and two point guards starting. So you know what I mean?
Hey,
what do you want me to say? You have two point guards and two centers now. I don't really know what else to say. You know, I couldn't even play 2K with that roster and expect to win. It's terrible.
Hey, man, these days, the way them rosters are built, it's anything but traditional, man. You can win. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a team that runs out with all threes. Say, go ahead and play ball. We'll see what happens.
I'm gonna say this, and hopefully nobody gets offended in the New Orleans area. But I could believe that Tom Benson put this line together because he didn't remember who the hell he had. And I'm just gonna leave it.
That's messed up.
I'm just gonna leave that there. That's how I
that's
feel about that. Rondo should have stayed with the Kings. The year he had the Kings, he should have just stayed there. Now he's gonna bounce around forever.
Because for the move for Rudy Gay to the Spurs, I feel like it was a good move. Again, especially for small ball purposes, like Keenan said, pretty much, especially when they go against the Warriors, when they go against these teams that play small ball, Rudy Gay is able to fit into the four, still provide scoring, still provide defense, can be a post-up option at times, and basically still can isolate, which is not really the Spurs ball or a cup of tea, but pretty much can provide points when needed. I feel like he just needs to improve his shooting from the outside just a little bit more, be a little bit less inconsistent, but he's playing off the bench, so I think it really doesn't matter. But regardless of that, it was a great move by the San Antonio, I feel. For the Rondo move, I feel like it's a solid pickup. I don't think it's a great move. I don't think it's a good move because, one, Rondo, even though he has glimpses of improved shooting, through time, I don't think it's going to really work out with Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday is not more of a, you know, he's not a cutting shooting guard. He's not a guy that is basically going to play off the ball really well. He's more of a guy that brings up the ball, you know, creates for the offense, be a scoring guard here and there. Some games he'd be more passive and provides great defense. But Rondo is more, you know, he needs the ball in his hands to create. I feel like it's going to work well with AD and Cousins. Rondo and Cousins are really good friends based off the interview I saw from Rondo and Cousins. And also they played AAU ball before. And I think it's really going to work out. But besides that, Rondo is bouncing around, like Angry said, pretty much from team to team. And I don't feel like he's going to fit completely there. He's just basically trying to get his market up for next season free agency, which I think he's still going to go to a different team and a team that's really, you know, lacking, that's not going to lack, that's lacking contendership. So, regardless of that, I think it's a solid move, but it's not the best move. So
listen to me
now. We're going to go straight into out of the NBA and go straight into another main event that's coming very soon, and I know a lot of people's talking about it. Mayweather and the Conor McGregor fight that everybody's waiting for, the World Tour press conference that everybody's seen, especially in Barclays Center in London. What do you guys think about all of this beef between McGregor and Mayweather?
It ain't even beef. It's all it's what they want. They selling it. They are selling it. Go ahead, Jeremy. I see them sides.
It's not genuine. These guys are businessmen. Conor McGregor realizes that the money he's going to make in this fight, it would honestly take him like almost five to six fights in MMA in main events with the belt to make the money he's making here. Mayweather is 40 years old, and he doesn't want to tarnish his undefeated record, or therefore put a mark on his legacy. So therefore, he needs to fight a scrub. And honestly, when it comes to Conor McGregor in boxing, he's going to be a scrub. This is like Mayweather picking a non-top 10 fighter to fight against. But for Mayweather, this is the biggest draw that he's going to find. We heard about the money issues, so he needs the biggest fight he can find. It's a good fight for him. It's a good fight for McGregor. McGregor's going to make money. He's going to get his ass kicked. Mayweather's going to make money and kick McGregor's ass and take the biggest fight he could. I mean, I got almost hyped up after the first press conference. I'm like, okay, this is awesome. This is good. You know, I'm getting hyped up for the fight. But then when the next three went on, you got guys calling each other names and just, you know, just the antics went, it almost felt like a WWE event. And I was like, okay, turn the channel. Not watching it. I actually, you know what? For one moment there, I said, I'm going to order this fight. Now I'm back to no, thank you.
For me, it's stupid. I feel the beef is not even like, again, we all know what's going to happen. We all know. I feel like McGregor is going to try his best and, you know, show his boxing or whatever, but it's not going to work, especially against a world-class boxer, against Mayweather. I feel like it's pretty much childish, and I wasn't even going to order the fight in the first place. I wasn't even thinking about it as soon as it was even announced. McGregor is making a show of it. He's a good showman. Something he can prove it, especially in the octagon and in the MMA ring, but when you go into that boxing ring, especially against a world-class fighter that's only known for his boxing and pretty much have an undefeated record, I don't feel McGregor even stands a chance. I don't feel like the show that the two is putting on, basically talking back and forth with each other, I don't think it's really worth it, to be honest, at this point.
I mean, you look at it stylistically. Let's get in depth with this, because
we're gonna draw views.
We can talk hypotheticals. You look at Conor McGregor's style. In the UFC and MMA, he's a counterpuncher. He's a counterfighter, like
Mayweather
was. He sits back. He lets his opponents come to him. He hits with precise strikes. He'll slip. He'll catch you. And then he relies on that power, which he does have. He has power. He has a sick left hand. That is the worst, the absolute worst style you can come in with and say you are going to beat Floyd Mayweather with. Floyd Mayweather will not come to you. He is going to stay back and do exactly what he does. He's going to slip. He's going to move around. He's going to make you come to him, and he will counter you with even more precise strikes. He's efficient. His efficiency is out of the charts. I remember I was looking at Facebook, and someone posted a picture of the Oscar De La Hoya Mayweather fight and asked, why is it that Mayweather won this fight? Oscar De La Hoya was pressing. He was the aggressor. Well, being the aggressor doesn't mean you're the more efficient fighter. Just because I'm throwing more doesn't mean I'm landing more. Mayweather had landed more than 50% of his punches in that fight against Oscar De La Hoya. It was ridiculous. It's just the worst style to come out with and say you're going to beat Floyd. Now, what's going to happen is he's going to get very frustrated in the early rounds seeing that he cannot hit Floyd, and he's going to start, once he starts realizing, man, I can't kick. I can't take him down. I can't clinch him and elbow him or knee him. I can't do any of this stuff. He's going to come and attack, and that's going to play right into Floyd Mayweather's game. This will either be a 12-round just straight demolition of Conor McGregor, or Floyd is going to knock him out at any point in time. And for anybody who says Floyd Mayweather does not have power, look at the Ricky Hatton fight. Go ahead. These are not MMA gloves. These are 16-ounce gloves. Conor McGregor will not hit with the same power that all of you think he will hit Floyd Mayweather with in this boxing fight. This is a boxing fight. Get it right. Floyd Mayweather is going to win. This is easy money. Cash out, homie.
Great point. Now, money, we're going to talk about Floyd's legacy as a boxer. After this fight, pretty much where do you see his like legacy as a boxer, especially just basically off his undefeated streak that he had before his retirement?
My opinion is this, and it's plain and simple. Floyd Mayweather, in my opinion, is the greatest boxer to ever step in the ring.
Gotcha. You know?
I mean, it's hard to argue that. I can't argue that. We can sit here and talk Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, Sugar Ray Leonard, Mike Tyson. I've never seen somebody perfect their craft in any sport. I've never seen anyone perfect their craft as well as Floyd Mayweather has. I mean, the object of the goal is to get in there, not get hit, and hit your opponent. He does that every single fight. Tremendously. It's not, I mean, the worst I've seen him fight was when he fought, I forgot who he fought. I think it was Sugar Ray. I think it was. Yeah, it was Sugar Ray. He got caught twice hard. His knees buckled. That's the first time we seen Floyd look vulnerable. That's one fight out of his whole career we've seen him look vulnerable from two punches. He won that fight. I mean, I've never seen somebody do what he did. Floyd Mayweather, to me, is the greatest boxer I think we've ever seen.
I think he's the greatest boxer that, especially for my era, coming in, I feel like he's the greatest boxer ever. I feel he basically, you know, has efficiency that many boxers don't have. He, like you said, throw punch. Most boxers are more power punchers, basically throw a lot of punches to basically try to land. And he's the type of guy that is very good at countering, very good at, you know, giving out and pretty much avoiding what the opponent's giving out. Very good bob and weave guy, and also very good at slipping punches and very good at countering. His efficiency in punching, especially throwing punches landing and basically throwing, you know, basically dishing out and basically taking. His efficiency is incredible, and I feel like for my era, especially watching him, watching the other boxers, like you can tell it's a big comparison between both of the two, or like Pac, Mayweather, or any other fighter that I've seen to basically step in a ring against him or just basically not fighting him. Mayweather's probably that dude. So we call it Mayweather's legacy as a boxer. I feel like he's the greatest all time, just basically how he fights and how other people fight that I've seen so far. I think dude is really incredible.
Now,
he may have a big mouth, but that hard work and dedication, that you can tell.
And I mean, we sit here and I feel we all agree he is the best boxer we've seen ever. This is simply because of the fact that no one does what they do better than what Floyd Mayweather does. Floyd Mayweather does what he does better than anybody else, any other boxer I've seen. Now, I look at a guy like Roy Jones, too. Yeah, I'm a huge Roy Jones fan. He's up there. You know, it's not a conclusive debate. I wouldn't say hands down he is, but there are other guys you can bring up there. Obviously, we can go back to the legends, but just in terms of overall dominance, I've never seen somebody dominate their opponents as easily as Floyd Mayweather does. Let's get that into perspective, you know.
All right, so the last topic off of the McGregor and Mayweather fight, where do you see Conor McGregor doing after this fight? Like, pretty much where do you see him pretty much pursuing after this Mayweather fight? Do you feel like he's going to go back to the MMA? Do you feel like he's going to continue boxing? Or do you feel like he's just going to retire with the money that he's going to be making from these fights?
He needs to retire, do something else, get out of fighting all in all. You're going to almost triple, quadruple your net worth. Go ahead and quit while, you know, you're still healthy. Do something else, man. You can find another way to make money with his personality. Make this paycheck, get this money, go do something else.
If McGregor is smart, take this paycheck, go back to MMA, fight maybe two or three more fights. If he wins them all, then he'd be smart to call Vince McMahon. Because that's where he's going to make the bulk of his money. It would be with Vince McMahon.
I was gonna say like pretty much like McGregor, go into this fight like you said, quadruple his network, go straight into the MMA, fight any person that really wants to challenge you. I know Jose Aldo got beat, and pretty much is gonna be out. Pretty much is going to be, you know, not be even a contender towards him. So anybody that's new or fresh that wants him to basically fight, pretty much do two or three more fights, like you said, basically see if he wins and basically still has a championship by all ends, pretty much retire and basically make enough money to just sit back and relax. Maybe he can do something acting, because I noticed that he has been taking a lot of roles and little, you know, Call of Duty, he played a character in Call of Duty, and then also for some short films and some short skits of improv comedy. He's been in some of those as well. I think he have a great personality to basically be a movie star, and pretty much be that guy to basically bring in a lot of money. You basically have the same effect that The Rock has. I think he has the same persona or same personality that he can basically do that, you know, come off of WWE or come off of MMA, just the same as The Rock, and basically be a movie star. I feel like he can be that.
Anyone who wants to debate this with me or my people right here, come on, bring it. You ain't going to win this. Any kind of McGregor fans out there think they could debate this with us? Come on down. We'll give you the number. I want to hear your argument. Please make my day. Come on.
There's a huge difference between thinking somebody's going to win and wanting somebody to win.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that you want somebody to win, but there's no way in hell you could actually think this man is going to win.
Bet with your mind, not your heart, people.
And with that, we move on from the topic of Mayweather McGregor to the NFL. Guys, the NFL season is coming near and going straight. And there's only like a few more days. I think the last time I checked the calendar is like pretty much 50 to 48 days left. Maybe 47, 46, I don't know. Regardless of that, football season near. What does your NFC East predict?
Go on, Jeremy.
NFC East, I think we did this one before. I predicted the Giants to win this division this time around.
Yeah, we have done this before. I picked the Eagles, I believe. I picked the Eagles to do it.
And I got the Giants. I feel their defense is going to be more better compared from last season especially. And also I feel like they added more weapons, even though I feel like Eli is still going to throw to his top guy and also create a lot of problems on offense, especially they didn't get a running back. but I feel like the defense is going to carry them to place, and I feel like the offense is still going to be dynamic, especially with all those receivers, Sterling Shepard, Odell, and Brandon Marshall, and also William Tide as the tight end. And pretty much as long as that's there, Cowboys, I feel like it's going to be a sophomore drought for Dak and Zeke, even though they still have some of their team or most of their team intact, which is another topic that I was going to go on. Who you feel is going to – do you feel Dak and Zeke Ezekiel Elliott is basically going to repeat last year's performance?
Rude awakening.
I don't even think Zeke going to call it a drought because he ain't going to be a drink from the well. That man ain't going to be on the field.
Out here wilding now.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, they were still investing in the accusation of assault before. Now he ain't got another
one.
I mean –
yeah, just today.
Can't stay out of trouble, man. Assuming he plays, assuming everything blows out and he comes in and plays, Cowboys fans, you are in for a rude awakening. You are in for a very rude awakening. Teams have gathered tape. They spent the offseason studying. It ain't going to be this easy. It ain't going to be as easy as it was last year. They understand what it is you do. Some of your offensive line has gone.
Yep.
You will be in for a rude awakening. Do not expect the same season you had last year. They can be good. I'm not saying you guys are going to fall off the face of the planet. Just don't expect what happened last year to happen this year, especially with how revamped this division got. It's going to be tough. Not going to be easy.
Okay.
All right, so what's the next one? In the NFC North?
The next topic is going to be Sammy Watkins, his comments on NFL players need to be paid more. The class of 2014 wide receivers will set the market. How do you feel about that, guys?
Mm. Me and Jeremy take this one personal.
I know y'all Bills fans. I mean, I'm gonna step back and let y'all. I'm not even gonna say anything about this one. I'm stepping back from this one. I'm letting you guys have the floor.
Thinking about the numbers, okay? The NFL generates more revenue than the NBA, but we all know that the NBA contracts really took this significant jump when they got that TV deal that pretty much left ESPN all but broke. Thing about it is, I agree with him. NFL players should get more, but should NFL players get $200 million? No. Should NBA players get $200 million? No. Neither should get $200 million, in my opinion. But what you can do to fix this is give these NFL players fully guaranteed deals, besides conduct, because conduct you should be able to get get some of your money back. But these deals need to be fully guaranteed. Now, there was a stat that said, some owner saying that if there was fully guaranteed contract, the contract would be less years. Well, guess what? Who cares? How many of these players actually make it to the end of these contracts if you're not a quarterback anyway? Or really think about it. You don't.
Right.
Because when you're getting your first real big deal, you're probably already 25 years old, maybe 26. So when a team throws you 6 years, these players don't make it to 32 years old in that deal. So who cares? Give them the 4 years, $60 million, all 60 guaranteed, and call it a day. You go ahead, Key.
No, I mean, I agree. To be honest with you, give these guys fully guaranteed deals. You're not gonna get max deals like Steph Curry got in the NFL. Not when you gotta build a 53-man roster. I'm just not gonna do it. I'm not gonna invest all that money into you when I know I got 52 other players I got to sign, especially if you're a wide receiver. Dude, I got to pay my quarterback first. I got to pay my left tackle first. I'm not going to sit here and give these guys that much money. We just saw David Carr get a huge payday. Well, you got other positions you got to fill out now. You know, and contracts come up. You got to pay these guys, but I'm not going to pay you that much money. You know, it's simple. Now, I do think the 2014 wide receiving class is going to set the market. I do. That's been arguably one of the best wide receiving classes we've seen probably ever in a long time. But in terms of the money, give these guys guaranteed deals fully and let them be happy. I'm not going to pay you that much money. I'm not. Well, football players should be paid a little bit more. But I'm sorry, you ain't getting Super Max Curry deals in the NFL. It's just not happening.
Money up to $201 million, especially for a football player, especially when you have to fill out, like you said, fill out a 52-53 man roster, especially with other players that's better. I mean, not better, but, you know, other players that's good at their position, especially on the football team. You have to worry about everybody else, too, pretty much. You have to worry about your quarterback. Obviously, the quarterback is the main position. They're going to get paid the most money. Linebackers, corners. I mean, corners and wide receivers pretty much almost the same thing. But you can have a, especially if it's a young corner. You have a young corner that gets paid and get a lot of money in the market as well. I feel the wide receiving class, like you said, is going to represent and set the market, for especially in 2014 draft class. But I don't think wide receivers, or basically just that, his comment should even be, you know, put into existence, especially $1 million like a Steph Curry contract. You got to be out of your mind, especially when I have to fill out my team and basically fill out, give this man money, especially how he plays on the defensive end, or give this man money because he deserves it, that he been through development and actually, you know, show some effort, show that he can actually be, you know, an all-pro type player. I'm not going to give you all of my money into this franchise to basically make this team go just for you to be the only player doing everything and then my team being shit. So
no, there's too many positions in need. There's too many important positions in football. In basketball, you can afford to overpay for your starting point guard and, you know, a starting three, maybe even a starting five. Like, you can afford to pay for those only because, what, the roster's 15 people deep, 15 players deep, I believe, in basketball, in the NBA.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry. I have way too many positions I need in football. I have my linemen. I have my quarterback. You have your premier skill position players. You got defensive backs. You got linebackers. It's just too many people. There's too many players that I need to fill, including your backups. Even your backups got to get paid. I'm sorry. I just can't see it. Can't see them making that much money in football.
No, I don't. It's never gonna happen. But as far as his comment on being paid more, I can't necessarily disagree with that. It was an interesting fact that I found out that the NFL honestly is really to the point where they're just being taxed by the government. They were listed since 1940 as a nonprofit organization. I learned today. Oh yeah, they was making crazy money.
Somebody needs to Wesley Snipes them, man.
You know, and I don't know if other people are aware of how Roger Goodell's contract works. Even this past year, he made $32 million. Each team paid him. So each team paid him through the revenue sharing $1 million. So like I said, if Goodell can make a guaranteed 32, then I mean, you know, somebody
got
to make guaranteed
players up.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, I don't see how the NFL can't get a big TV deal like the NBA did. I mean, I just don't get it. I mean, the NBA TV deal is actually a disaster, and I don't know if any other big organization or big league is going to get a TV deal like that again now.
I feel you.
So, Mr. Watkins, I don't see it happening. I don't even know if I even see them getting paid more either, because like I said, with the way the NFL is a dirty game, the NFL is a very, very dirty game when it comes to business. So, in the day, the players do not control the NFL. The owners control it. There are no LeBron James walking around in the NFL.
No, they're not. Even Brady doesn't make that much if you really break it down.
No. You will be gone. you will be gone. I mean, or they're gonna put you somewhere, or get rid of you and put you somewhere like Cleveland, where you can have all the demands you want, but you're gonna get your leg broken behind a terrible offensive line or something. So it's not like basketball. So it's just it's a very dirty game.
For you, when I got all this talent coming out of college, these days it ain't like before. These days you got college kids coming in ready to take people's jobs right from the get go. I'm not gonna overpay you, and I could go out. I could trade you, get a first-round pick, and then I can go ahead and pick that to replace you. Younger, probably faster, maybe a little stronger. I can't see it, brother. I cannot see it either. It's cutthroat. Victor Cruz said it best, man.
Wait. I mean, like I said, so I think the last thing on our board that we have for tonight was our guy, Tom Brady. And how much longer, how much more do you think he has in the tank? How much longer do you think he can go?
I hope not much more. To be honest, I hope not much more. But, I mean, honestly, just being real, I think the guy can go as long as he wants. If he wants to play until he's 45, I think he can do it. Honestly, the way that system works, the speed in which he gets that ball out of his hands, I think they can run that offense with him until he's 45 years old if he wants to. Same thing, Drew Brees made the same comment. He was like, I want to play until I'm 45. I don't know too much about Drew Brees lasting that long. Definitely, you know, skill-wise he can, but the way that offense works in New England, it can work perfectly for Tom Brady to last. You know, it's built for him to get that ball out really quick, hit his target, and go. I rarely see him hold on to the ball for that long. He can last if he wants to go to 45.
I think as long as they're continuously putting talent, which we saw them attack the offseason this year as if they lost that Super Bowl. And I think that had to do with Bill Belichick. I feel like he knows he won the Super Bowl, but he didn't naturally feel like he won that Super Bowl. So he attacked the offseason really hard. We saw him dish out some money, make a lot of changes. I think he can go. I think he's gonna end up going for another. I'm gonna say three. Let's say another 3 years. Maybe two to three years tops.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to be because he can't go after that. I think he's going to get to the point where he's like, I want to maybe do something different.
He's going to hit that
Jordan
point. Those
training camps become longer.
You know, he's going to hit that Jordan point where he's just not interested in it anymore. He's going to leave. And, boy, 31 other teams, their whole fan base is just going to come to just utter bliss when he finally announces it. But, yeah, he's awesome. He can go as long as he wants. Realistically, I think three, I'll even go a little higher. I'll say maybe 4 or 5 years he can last. That's just being optimistic.
Correct. I agree. We're going to see what happens with him. But, like I said, I'm going to give him 2 to 3. Then, you know, he's going to just not be interested anymore. What do I have left to prove?
Go on, Tom Brady. We'll gently push you out the door. Just ride off into the sunset, man. Please.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, how's that? I mean, I think we touched on a lot of subjects tonight. Just a little recap for people. You know, we touched on Gregor Mayweather. We touched on the NBA offseason, the summer league, the moves. We also touched on a little bit of NFL. Like I said, I know as we go forward, we will be touching the NFL a lot more, especially as we get deeper into training camp. We start seeing cuts and the rosters form. So it's not really too, for me, not too much to talk about right now as far as that goes. The NBA obviously had a little wild swing there. But like I said, I'm excited. I'm definitely excited. We're getting into that point of the year where all the sports are going to start connecting and intertwining and everything's going to be going. And, man, I just can't wait.
No, it's going to be fun, man. I can't wait for this season. Cannot wait. It's going to be very, very fun. Any Bills fans that are listening right now, please, please keep it locked. Jeremy and I, we will be doing a podcast together, strictly Buffalo Bills, for you, all of my Buffalo Bills fans listening right now. Keep it locked. We're going to be right there with you.
Oh, that's it. That's it, brother. But, hey, man, it was good cast with you and Tay tonight, man. Like I said, we're going to get back on this thing. Hopefully this week we'll do another one. Bring you guys the latest news. Remember, go to our Twitter page, Angry Fanatics, Facebook page, Angry Fanatics, everything, Angry Fanatics. Like it, join, follow. And actually, you know, include your opinion. You know, if you guys want to come on the show, let us know. We want to include you, the fan. Like I said, we're fans ourselves. We have a voice. And a lot of fans are a lot smarter than what they're given credit for. And that's the ones that we want to find. Because we can all learn from each other. So like I said, come on, you know, come on the show. Contact us.
Debate with us. Talk with us. We're here. We want to hear what you guys have to say. We're here for you. And we love what we do. We love talking sports. We know you do as well. Feel free to hit up any of us. You got Chad, you got Tavon, you got Jeremy, you got myself. Hit any of us up. We'll be more than happy to bring you on. Talk some sports with you guys.
Other than that, man, everybody have a good night.
Sleep tight.
This week.
See you guys later.
Catch you later, Keith.
Peace.